davening for somebody where it's okay. Davening for somebody where we have little hope that it's actually going to be effective. That was where we went with this, because we have a Mishnah in Brachos that says that you're not allowed to daven for God to change nature. That's a basic point. We call it a tefilas shav, a prayer in vain. One of the examples we gave was davening that the fetus inside the womb should change from male to female, or vice versa. So we said that you don't do. A person who goes into his granary, measures the grain, and davens that it should be more, you know, but you already measured it. You know what the number is. So we don't do that. That's called a prayer in vain. We said somebody arrives in town and sees that there's a big tumult going on, there are fire engines, and he davens, oh boy, God, I hope that's not my house. Please let that not be my house. Like, either it is or it isn't. So that, we said, is a prayer in vain. Even though we have plenty of precedent for davening for miracles, nonetheless, the Gemara seems to assume, the Mishnah seems to assume, that we're actually not supposed to do that. So we're going to have to actually understand so what's going on in those cases. But we brought various halachic authorities who said, no, you're not supposed to daven for a miracle. I'm not going to go through all the cases that we saw last time. We had Rabbi Akiva Eger, we had the Vilna Gaon, we had Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, the Nishmas Avram in Yoredei, and the laws of Bikur Cholim, all of them saying you're not supposed to daven for a miracle. The most we had was Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, and it was brought in the Nishmas Avram, saying in Shema Koleinu, you could ask for God to do something. That's basically what we got out of that. Yes, Bobby?
We left Egypt. We're at the sea. Seas are usually split, but we prayed.
No, Hashem said march into the sea.
Well,
Hashem says specifically not to pray. He says, Matitz Akelai. He says to Moshe, what are you davening to me for? Speak to the Jews and tell them to go forward. But we're going to come back to things like that, so hang in there. The question we left off with last time was a question of why you're not supposed to daven for a miracle. What's wrong with davening for a miracle? So we gave one approach last time, which was it makes you look bad if you do it in public, like you're appealing to God for a miracle and then, you know, nothing shows up. That was a Yerushalmi. But the stronger idea, certainly for a case where someone's davening in private, was what Shlomo Zalman Orbach mentioned, which was it weakens a person's emuna, it weakens a person's faith. To daven for things that you have no expectation are actually going to come true just sets yourself up for failure, because it means you daven for things and they don't happen. You daven for things and they don't happen. You stop believing that davening can even be effective. And this is really important because it makes davening into non-davening. It isn't just that it reduces the incentive to daven, but it's actually not called davening in the first place. And here's what I mean by that. There's a debate, we discussed this a long time ago. We were talking about the question of a doctor who needs to miss davening in order to provide medical care. So we talked about what the mitzvah is of davening altogether. And we said that the Rambam believes that there's a daily mitzvah of davening. That's a de'oraisa, that's a biblical mitzvah. Ramban thinks our daily prayers are de'rabanan, it's a rabbinic institution. Mide'oraisa, on a biblical level, he says, no, there is no mitzvah of regular prayer. When you're in a time of need, you call out to Hashem. That's your mitzvah. But that's it. But the Ramban does make one comment, which I brought you in source Aleph on this week's sheets. I'll put the link in the chat again so that people can download this week's sheets if they don't already have them. He says, Ve'im ula yiyah midrashem betfila ikar min ha-Torah. He says, if you're going to tell me, this is the Ramban commenting on the Rambam Sefer HaMitzvos, on Mitzvah Saseh number 5, the challenge to Mitzvah Saseh number 5. He says, if you're going to tell me that there is a biblical root for davening at all, Nimna oso b'minyano, we're counted in the count of mitzvos, Shela Harav, of the Rambam, V'nomar shehi mitzvah le'ez hatzaros, it is a mitzvah that in a time of trouble, that we should believe that Hashem hears our davening, v'hu hamatzil min hatzaros b'tfila uza'aka, and he saves us from trouble via our davening. The mitzvah, according to the Ramban, the mitzvah of davening, biblically, if it exists at all, is a mitzvah of emunah. It's a mitzvah of belief. That's really what it's all about. This shows up powerfully in a comment by Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach in Source Beis. Remember that, I think I mentioned this to you previously, Halicho Shlomo, the sefer I'm quoting Rosh Shlomo Zalman from, is not his writing. It's his students recording what he taught. So here is a footnote from the Halicho Shlomo on Tefillah. It says, Ragil haya Rabbeinu Lomar. He says, our master, Rosh Shlomo Zalman in other words, was accustomed to say, right, we're up to Source Gimel, Source Base. He says, our master, Rosh Shlomo Zalman, was accustomed to say, D'mikom akom ein lehispalel al hachola besoch hatfila, ela im yesh lo kesher kol shu elav umargish bitza'aro. You shouldn't daven for an ill person in your Shmona Esrei unless you have a connection to the person, you feel the person's pain. Ki ein lavo el hamelech, melech malchi amlachim gadosh baruch hu, lelo siba v'tatzdik yal mashenitchak levakesh avur zulaso. You don't come to the king without a reason for bothering the king. You want to come to Hashem and ask Hashem for a favor? You coming to Hashem and saying, God, I want you to change reality? You have to have a good reason for it. You have to be, you know, invested. V'haya misaber be'inyan ze al hagon moreno harav Yeshua Lev Diskin. And he told the story about Yeshua Lev Diskin. This is a great story. Shepam bikshu adam lehispala be'ad chole. Somebody came to Yeshua Lev Diskin, major rav in Yerushalayim, and asked him, please daven for a certain ill person. V'ne'enelo, and the person, and Yeshua Lev Diskin agreed. He said, okay, I'm going to daven for him. La'achar she'tziva, we're in the brackets now. La'achar she'tziva, kidargo lafrish sach mesuyam letovas beis hayesomim. After instructing him to designate a certain sum to tzedakah for the orphanage, so Rishu Balev Diskin said, "Donate to the orphanage. I will daven for your chola." The cha'avor zman, sometime later, zman ma, pogsho harav Yeshua Lev Zal. Rishu Balev Diskin encountered this fellow. Vishalo lishlam oso chole, and he asked him, "How's the patient?" Ve'anahu, and this fellow answered him, "Shehivri kvar be'ezus Hashem." Oh, thank God, he's doing much better. He's gotten much better. V'nisroim olav. So Rishu Lev Diskin complained to him, "Al shlo bisra akach, you didn't tell me." V'itricho kol oso zman lispalo olav. All this time, I have been davening for him. You've made me daven for him. It's not like I just say words. But Amro, he said, "V'chikala be'enecha bakasha kazu betfila." Is this light in your eyes making a request when you daven? Every time you daven, you have to search for a reason, a motivation to daven for the chole. It isn't that you just, you know, here's my list of names and I'm going to rattle them off to God. You have to be motivated to do it. And then in parentheses, va'af rabbeinu nisroi mal davar zeh. In the parentheses, he says, yeah, Rosh Hashanah Zalman also was upset about this. Upam nazaf b'talmid she'ichem lehodial yeshuaso b'chazdei Hashem. One time, he yelled at a student who delayed telling him that this person who he's davening for had gotten better. Va'amro, and he said, gimel pa'amim bayom hineni koev u'meitzer b'tzarascha. He says, three times a day, I am in pain over your pain. V'lamarak ata matzasa lenachon lehodieni. Why did you take until now to tell me? If you ask someone to daven for a person, you have to update them. You have to keep them posted. You have to let them know what's going on. So my point in bringing this, well, first of all, my point in bringing this is because I love these two stories. I think that it speaks to what it means to daven for somebody. That davening for somebody is not just, you know, rattling it off. Davening for somebody is investment. That's number one. But number two, it speaks to our point about why you don't daven in vain. You don't daven for something that you don't expect to have happen. It's supposed to be a real appeal to Hashem. And therefore, if it's something you never expected to have happen, you're not going to have that kind of emotion. You're not going to have that kind of motivation, right? If you don't think it's actually gonna play out.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a real wow.
I think so.
Yeah.
So this is going on all the time in my life with Tehillim chat. Davening for blah blah blah. Tehillim, say the whole thing and keep them in your prayers.
Yep.
You don't know the person. It's my cousin's friend's daughter. Tenth time removed. Fine. Then you feel bad not davening. The same thing. Like when we're saying for Chayalim, I don't know the person. I see the name. So is it? I'm not saying you shouldn't daven for a person you don't know, but is that part of the intent? Like, how can I have the intent?
Right. Right, so I think it makes it very, very difficult. I mean, with the Chayalim, I find it easier because you put yourself in the headspace of either Chayalim or family of Chayalim, and even though I don't know the difference between name number 5 on my list and name number 15 on my list, nonetheless, that applies. It applies for them. Yeah, but I think it is hard when you get these, you know, emails and WhatsApps and whatever else, and it's true, people take it very lightly. That's not what Chazal had in mind when they were talking about
davening. I'm not saying I don't have the kavanah. I know there's people all over the world who they need yeshuas and refuas, but it's like,
yep. No,
I have guilt when I'm like, delete. I can't do everything.
Yep, okay. I'll show you a gemara that we'll see. It's going to be in Source Yud Aleph. It's a Gemara Nedarim. Rav Dimi is going to say somebody who doesn't visit people who are sick and look after them and see how they're doing causes the person to die. That's what he says. Why? Because you're not going to daven properly if you don't know their condition, if you don't know what's going on. You're just, inserting a name in a Hiratzon. That's not the same thing. That's not what the goal is. The question is, the fundamental question is it better than nothing? And the answer that we're getting here is no. It's worse than nothing. Because what it actually ends up being is, a tefillah without emunah.
This is helping me because I have a lot of guilt.
No, get rid of your guilt. Drop the guilt.
Thank you. I'm saying this helps. It's like, yeah. My mother's like, say it once and then delete it. Just say one.
It's not helping me because, I can't follow up on everybody that I presume that they're still having the medical problem that still exists to some degree, at least, or they're going to in the future have the problem.
So, yeah.
The nature of the disease that we're dealing with. But I can't call somebody up and say, I still in remission?
So
how do you do that?
I don't think you're doing anything bad for these people when you're davening for them.
No, but you're doing something bad for tefillah, for your tefillah,
right.
Yeah. No, so I'll tell you, I go back to people. For me, most often it's not the patient who's coming to me, it's the patient's relative who's coming to me.
Right.
But where I know that it's the person themselves, I'll find a way to ask, what's going on. I don't expect them to come back to me because they're going to 100 people and asking them all to daven and they're not going to.
Well, that's the other problem. I don't get updates. I have to call my people and go,
right.
What's the story?
And that's what I try to do.
Yeah.
But it's true. This is a huge problem. Look, I gave a shiur years ago on tzedakah obligations. And I remember coming across a tshuva from a rabbi in Eretz Yisrael who said, the fact that now somebody can email 10,000 people a request for tzedakah cheapens what it means to have a request for tzedakah. When we say you're not allowed to turn somebody away, that doesn't apply to these mass emails, to a list. Guy doesn't even see the names on the list that he's emailing it to. He bought a list of, and he plugs it in and off he goes. That's not the same thing. It's not what halacha has in mind. So take a look at Source Gimel, where Rav Shlomo Zalman gives practical guidance for these kinds of tefillah gatherings that go on. Hidrich Rabbeinu, I mentioned it last time also, but now it's relevant in this context. Hidrich Rabbeinu shelo laharbos betfilas rabim bepirsum v'chulei. Rav Shlomo Zalman's guidance was not to have mass tefillos publicizing, let's all get together and daven. Im kvar nisyashu harofim milarabos esachole bedarche ateva. If the doctors have reached the point where they believe they've exhausted natural means. Afilu hu gavra rabba. Even if it's for a great person, v'gam yishkelu heitevim l'shanos hashemo. He says also this business of changing names, changing the guy's name and saying now it should be, add a chayim to his name or whatever it is. He says not so fast. Kim lo ye anu, but filasim velo yisrape, because if they aren't answered, the guy doesn't get better. Yesh lachush lariv yon chas v'shalim ben yane yamuna. You're going to weaken the yamuna. Vahora l'shoalim shebechia gavna yispalalu sheyetav l'chole v'yetav l'mishpachto. What you daven is, God be good to the patient, be good to his family. V'loivak shudafgal refuaso, don't ask for refua specifically. V'ashem hu atov bein of yaseh. God will figure out what to do with the tefillah. That's Rosh Shlomo Zalman. It's not me. Don't throw anything at me. But that's his statement. Then you can it resonates.
You know? It happened. There's another example. A relative was in good health. Unfortunately, she fell, hit her head, went to the hospital. She was in her early 80s, and the doctor said she's not coming back. She's completely brain dead. But her son was a rabbi. Said just stop and forget.
So that's where we're going. That's where we're going with this question. So what do you do when it feels like tefillas shav? When it feels like it's a prayer in vain, it's dangerous for emuna. So what do we do? So a few approaches. Approach number one, and this goes back to exactly what you just said. Daven for Hashem's chesed in ways other than refuah shleima. You know, you're not asking for a refuah shleima. You're asking Hashem, please be good to so and so. If you take a look at Dalet from that same footnote as Gimel was, also from Rav Shlomo Zalman, Uchshenis asfu pam letfila avur chole b'matzav kazeh. One point they gathered to daven for somebody who was sick in such a condition where the doctors have abandoned any hope. Hikdim Rabbeinu va'omar. So Rav Shlomo Zalman began and said the following. Aleinu ladas sha'avo pi shema'aminim anu b'tchias ha'meisim shetia be'eshiya la'ratzim eis ha'bori yizbarach shemo. He said, granted that we believe that there will be tchias ha'meisim at the time Hashem chooses, he's going to bring the dead back to life. Avo b'chein ein anu mevaksh mishiyah davar davka ata. We're not requesting make tchias ha'meisim now. We say bring Mashiach now. We don't daven let tchias ha'meisim be now. The Kevin Shalafidas Harofim Rafuas Hachola Akshav Hime Ein Trias Hamesim. And he said, since the doctors believe that for this patient to come back, that's basically resurrection from the dead. That's what the doctors believe. Lochei Nikra Perak Tehillim Echad Bilvad will say one parak of Tehillim. Unachavin Shiyiya Letovas Hachola. We have in mind it should be for the benefit of the patient, whatever benefit looks like. However, at the same time, even in a circumstance like this, we don't stop believing in Hashem, that Hashem will have mercy on the person. There is still hope that Hashem will heal him. It's just that you don't make that the focus of your tefillah, of your prayer. That's the position of Rav Shlomo Zalman.
What does it mean by dying
meaning, you don't make that your tefillah, but you have bitachon that Hashem could heal him, and you hope that Hashem will heal him.
I'm not saying that. You're davening for whatever Hashem should have brought him on the person. If that means Hashem decides there's a chance of refuah, it's like
then great.
Included in it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, exactly. We're not against refuah.
No, okay.
Yeah.
We're not. I guess it's what you're saying in your work, exactly what the tefillah is. That's what we're talking about, right?
Right. Right. I saw an article online. I first looked into this topic, I don't know how many years ago, 5-7 years ago. And I saw an article by Rabbi Yeshua Kaganoff online where he notes that you're allowed to daven for a condition not to get worse. There's a Tosos in Bechoros, Lamed Ches Amud Beis, commenting on the short line that I brought you in Source Hay. The Gemara in Bava Kama says, Masriyin al hachikuch b'shavas. Lahasriya is a term for gathering people to daven. It may include shofar, may not include shofar. That's a whole other discussion. But it says you can gather people to daven on Shabbos for chikuch for chikuch. That's all it says. Chikuch is, as I added in brackets, shchin, boils. So Tosos is bothered, because the Gemara in Bechoro says that boils are a mum kavua. That's a permanent blemish that doesn't get better. This is a condition that they knew of in their day. I don't know what it is, what it's analogous to in our medicine. But it was some condition that, certainly left to its own devices, was not getting better. They never saw it get better. So Tosos says, how are you davening for it. What do you mean? You can daven for this condition. So Tosos' answer is, you can daven that it not get worse.
Sounds like bullous pemphigus.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, you're speaking from a medical perspective. It sounds nice. I don't know. You say you use Latin. The point for us is that this is a way to deal with the problem. You daven for what you can, hope for. Daven that it not get worse. Maybe you can daven for the patient to have the emotional strength to deal with whatever is coming their way. That's something you could daven for. So modify your tefillah so that it recognizes the circumstance. That's one approach. Yes, Bobby.
Leprosy doesn't get better. It just goes to different stages. Yet Moses prayed for his sister.
Saraz is not leprosy. Saraz is not leprosy.
Right, right.
Okay.
Well, we do have dapsone now.
So that's,
we have dapsone now.
So yeah. that's number one. Approach number two is to say, if your concern is really emunah, right, that you'll stop believing that tefillah works, so maybe you could still be motivated to daven based on the fact of human limitations. What I mean by that comes out of a comment by Rav Kook in Source Vav. Rav Kook is not talking about our topic. Rav Kook is talking about something very different. He's dealing with the issue of mitzitza by a bris mila. The Gemara says that when you do a bris mila, you have to draw out the blood from the spot of the bris mila using suction in order to prevent something. It's generally assumed it's referring to preventing infection. That's what you're trying to accomplish. Why does that sound strange to you?
Well, the way they used to do it is strange.
That's a different question. But that was the mechanism you had. Was this is how you get rid of the blood.
I
so
won't get into that discussion.
That's a whole other discussion.
Case,
but the point in Source Vav, I'm totally not going there.
No, you don't want to go there.
The point in Source Vav is, Rav Kook makes a comment on this. He says, Kol Zed, this whole discussion of is it medically necessary, is it not medically necessary, Eino Mo'il is ineffective. Ela im nachlit shedivrei harofim heim muchzakim etzlenu kevadai. Unless we're going to say we treat what doctors say as certainty. Rav Kook says, we view what a doctor says as not 100% certain, as a statement that's in doubt. Ask the doctors themselves. They don't say that what they're saying is 100% guaranteed. He says, from time to time, an individual or many doctors will come up with some principle and say, this is a principle in medicine, and not just in medicine, but in every science. They come up with an idea, a theory, a principle, and lots of people say, this is true. And then another generation arises, and they examine it, and they say everything you said was silly. Right? I mean, when you think of the number of things that were received medical wisdom until the 19th century, the circulatory system, you look at it and you're just like, wow, someone really thought that was true. So Rav Kook says there are no guarantees when you deal with the world of medicine. I'm borrowing that idea to say maybe a person is entitled to say, who says the doctor is right? The doctor says this person has 3 weeks to live. Do you know how many times I've heard, I'm sure you've heard stories where the doctor told somebody they had X number of weeks to live or X number of months to live, and now it's years later and, still going.
He's alive.
That doesn't mean that the doctor is entirely off base. It could be the doctor made the prediction 100 times, and I met the one who survived. It's not that the doctor is necessarily always wrong because of this, but it means you take it with a grain of salt. And based on that, take a look at source number Zion. This is from a book, Jewish Guide to Practical Medical Decision Making, by Rabbi Jason Weiner, who's the chaplain at Cedar Sinai in Los Angeles. Also, Eimatai, which is sponsoring this shiur along with the shul, so he is one of the two main people behind Eimatai, him and Rabbi Shlomo Brody. So if you take a look at Source Zion, Rabbi Weiner says the following. What about Rabbi Auerbach's concern that this falls under the prohibition against praying for a miracle? Don't we have concern that you are praying for a miracle when you pray for somebody when the doctors have already said it ain't going to happen? So he brings an idea from the Stipler. The Stipler was Rabbi Yaakov Kanievsky. People today are very familiar with Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky, who passed away last year. But Rabbi Chaim Kanievsky's father, Rabbi Yaakov Kanievsky, is the one being quoted here. So Kanievsky quotes the Chazon Ish, his brother-in-law, who was asked this precise question. He was asked that question about davening for somebody and isn't that a problem of davening for a miracle? The Chazon Ish responded that he knew of a rabbi, here you go, who was told by his physicians that he would live only a short while longer, but who then went on to live another 30 years. Sometimes, despite a dire prognosis, a person can indeed live much longer. We are thus not praying for a miracle, but simply that the doctors are wrong. You're davening that the doctors should be wrong. Okay, it's an interesting formulation. Alternatively, you could suggest what I brought you in source Ches from a footnote from Dr. Weiner, Rabbi Dr. Weiner, in the same discussion. Another approach offered by Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky is that since prayer for a terminally ill person to be cured is a forbidden prayer for a miracle, rather than praying that the patient be miraculously cured, one should pray that a cure be found for the disease. See Yonis and Rosenblum, Rabbi Yaakov. Such a prayer would be permitted as it does not beseech God to alter the natural order, but rather assumes the cure must already exist in nature and is just waiting to be discovered. I thank Rabbi Yaakov Siegel for bringing this source to my attention. So that works. You can daven for the research to help. Atachone l'adam das. We ask Hashem to give people wisdom. So, how many times we hear about discoveries that happen by accident?
Always.
So, guide them on some path that they'll discover something that will be helpful. So our first approach is to say that you daven for Hashem to be good and help them and be merciful and whatever. Your second approach is to say, maybe the doctors are wrong. Maybe the researchers will find something. So that's a second approach. And then the third approach of three is daven with recognition that your tefillah might lead to other benefits beyond curing this particular patient. There are other benefits to your prayer that aren't necessarily what you were shooting for in the first place. If you take a look at source test, also from Rabbi Weiner, he says, even if the prayers do not result in any change at all in the patient's condition, they're nevertheless a source of merit for him or her. All of those who prayed aroused heavenly compassion through their prayers, which were uttered specifically because of this individual. These merits will stand by the individual in the world to come, may also protect his or her offspring in the future, and they thus have incredible value. Finally, argues Kanievsky, these prayers can bring recovery to other individuals and to the community as a whole. I have to admit, I'm not entirely clear on how that works. We made such a big deal, right? Bobby thought it was very strange. We made such a big deal about getting the name right and using the mother's name instead of the father's name because that's the one we know for sure. So I don't know how it is that suddenly your prayer can work for other people in the community who weren't even named, not by their mother and not by their father. Nonetheless, that's what he says. I know nothing about how prayers work.
So, we're going to use it, put it in a sack, we're going to use these on Tuesdays, we'll use these on Wednesdays, and we'll use these next decade. And for fires, we'll use this, and for this one.
Well, what's he going to do with the fact that we didn't say Tachanun yesterday? He's missing one. Okay. The longer discussion. Okay. So, this is all in terms of Tfilas Shav. When people feel like their prayer isn't going to accomplish anything, and that undermines the quality of prayer. It undermines the whole idea of davening. But what about when it's not just that it's hopeless, but that the patient is actually suffering? And by davening for them to go on, we're effectively davening for them to go on in pain. So what do we do at that stage? I'm not now having a shiur on, how long a person has to go and, do they have to pursue treatment even when it's, even when they're in great pain and they have no hope and so on. That's its own shiur. But do I have to daven for this person to live when they're clearly in terrible pain? So the classic Gemara that starts off this conversation is Source Yud, Gemara in Ksuvos. Slika Amsei de Rebbe Le'igra. The story there is that Rebbe Yudah Hanasi, who is the giant of Torah Shabbal Peh, canonizer of the Mishnah, protected the Jews from the Romans in the end of the 2nd century, beginning of the 3rd century. Real overarching colossus, was dying, and he was in great pain. He had something bowel-based. It's unclear exactly what it was. There actually is some medical evidence that some have used to try to figure out exactly what his condition was, but he had some terribly painful illness. So, Salka Amsei, the Rebbe Le'igra, his maid, went up to the roof. There's a base medrash. The Talmidim are davening for Rebbe to live. The maid goes up to the roof. Amran, she said, Elyonim mevakshin es Rebbe. Vatachtonim mevakshin es Rebbe. Up in the heavens, they are seeking Rebbe. They want Rebbe Yehuda Hanasi to pass away and to leave this world and to come to our plane of existence. But down here in this world, they're also looking for him. They also want him. So she davened up on the roof that those who are down here, who are davening for Rebbe, should overpower those who are up there. She wants the human tefillah to be effective. But she saw how often he had to go to the bathroom. And remember, going to the bathroom in those days wasn't what going to the bathroom is nowadays, the whole latrine business. And he would take off his tefillin, and then he would come back from the bathroom, he'd put them back on, and he was in such pain. Amra, she said, may it be God's will that the heavens win out, that they defeat us down here. But the rabbis didn't stop davening. Shakla kuza, she took a jug, Shadya me'igra la'ara. She threw it off the roof, down to the ground. Ishtiku merachem merachame. They were silenced from davening, like they're, you know, shocked. What was that? The nach nafshe de Rebbe. And Rebbe passed away. Now, that story is a difficult story on many levels, meaning the only thing that was keeping him alive was the moment-to-moment prayer, and therefore the moment they stopped davening, he's gone. Yeah, there's a lot to understand and to unpack there. But the big question is, who was right? In this story, this is just history. It's a depiction of an event. But who's right in this story? Is Rebbe's maid the victor in this story because she's really right? Or is she the villain? Right? Maybe she did something terrible. She caused Rebbe to die. The text isn't explicit here. However, we do have texts elsewhere that indicate that, in fact, she was right. She is considered pious, and she is right for having done this. And that brings us to a comment from the Ran, Rabbeinu Nisim, on a Gemara in Nedarim. And this Gemara in Nedarim, Source Yud Aleph, is the one that that I mentioned before, I said we would get to, so now here we are. The one I said about not examining somebody who's sick, and therefore the patient dies because the person didn't really daven for them. So, Kiasa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Amar, he said, Kol ha-mevaker es ha-chola, anyone who examines an ill person, remember that when we use the term bikur cholim, we always translate it as visiting the sick, but levakir doesn't really mean to visit. Levakir is to analyze, to examine, to look after. And in the Gemara, we understand that really the goal in bikur cholim is twofold. Number one, to look after their needs, to actually look around and say, what does this person need? And number two, to be moved by that analysis to daven for them. That's why we do bikur cholim. So Rav Dimi says, Kol mevaker es hachole, anyone who examines the sick, gorem lo sheyichye, causes him to live. V'chol she'eino mevaker es hachole, and if someone doesn't go examine the sick, gorem lo sheyamos, he causes him to die. So the Gemara says, my grama, what do you mean he causes it? If you're trying to tell me that anybody who examines the sick will daven for mercy for them to live, and the opposite, if they don't visit, they don't examine, then they're davening for them to die, is that really what you believe? That somebody is davening for this person to die? Ella, no. If you don't go look after the person, then you won't daven for the person to live or to die. In other words, you'll be neutral. And because you didn't daven for the person, therefore, that person dies. That's what the Gemara in Nedarim says. So a person who has the opportunity to go look after the chole and doesn't do so is, you know, is liable for the fact that they didn't look after the chole. That's the statement in the Gemara. On that Gemara, you get the Ran in Source Yud Beis. The Ran writes, "Pa'amim shetzarech levakesh rachmim al chole sheyamus." When the Gemara says daven for the patient to die, the Ran says there are times when one in fact has to daven for the patient to die. Kigon, for example, shemitzta'er hachole b'chol yo harbe. The patient is in a lot of pain, and it's not possible for the patient to live. So writes the Ran in Nedarim, and he quotes the story of Rebbe. There are other examples I could bring. I didn't want to just, you know, make this a series of sources, but you have a Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Pei Daled, in which Rabbi Yochanan loses his chavrusa Reish Lakish, and Rabbi Yochanan, and the term in English today would be loses his mind. He can't, he cannot deal with the, you know, with it, to the point where the chachamim actually daven for his death. We're not doing anything to hasten death. We're daven. We're going to come back to that question. Hang on there.
Rabbi Yochanan had guilt.
There was a lot more.
Just like Rav Kahana, where Rav Kahana, right, he goes ahead and gets angry at him because he thinks he's making fun of him because he has
there's a lot and more then, to talk about in the Gemara. The Gemara in Tanis, Chav Gimel Lamed Aleph, the classic where Choni HaMa'agel goes to sleep and he wakes up and nobody knows him anymore, and he has nobody who recognizes him, and he, you know, also the idea of davening to die.
So if you're davening and the person is not sick but in pain, davening that they don't be in pain and they're not sick, and why would God even make this fellow who
but
is
the answer
such,
to the
a
question.
Leader, such a tremendous guy, why would you even give him this kind of problem? Just let him go to sleep and move on.
So that's part of the question. I mean, the assumption here is that there are things that you don't get to daven for. Like, you just assume, like, this is something that doesn't change, and therefore now I need to daven for something other than healing.
I don't understand how davening is not davening.
Okay, so I'm going to get to that. I really will.
Everybody
does. I really will. The Nishmas Avram on this quotes a Yerushalmi, which is kind of a shocking Yerushalmi in Sois Yud Gimel. It describes an Amora who has a baby and something goes wrong. Unclear whether this was in the Bris Mila that something went wrong or something went wrong in general, but the baby's genitalia were damaged to the point where they would not be halachically allowed to marry anymore. There was some terrible accident, and what he did was he actually fasted for the child, for the baby to die, because of the future that's awaiting this baby. That's a horrific thing to think about. Infant mortality was different in those days than it is nowadays, and I think that contributes somewhat to the change in our perspective on it. But my point in bringing it is not really to discuss that Gemara per se, but to show that this seems to be a legitimate course of action. So Rosh Shlomo Zalman Orbach supports this. If you take a look in Source Yudalid, in Shuvas Mincha Shlomo, he says, Gam ba'osa shah shemivakesh umispalal Hashem shachola yamos. He says, even as you're davening for the patient to die, gam kein chayav hu lihis asek b'hatzalaso ulchal alves haShabbos afilu kama pa'amim. Even as you're davening for this person to die, at the same time, if something bad happens, his heart stops, whatever it is, you have to do what you can in order to save him. And you would override Shabbos in order to save him. Even many times, even as you're davening for this. Now, I'm not going into the question of which treatments are required, which treatments are not required, because that's an endless shear in its own right. We'll never get back to this topic. Rosh Hashanah Zalman allows you to not do certain things. But if it's something that is required, he says, you have to do it, even as you're davening for this person to die. So now I come to Dina's question.
Wait.
Hang in there 1 second. It's important to see this through. The Nishmas Avram addresses this issue. I didn't give you sheets in the Nishmas Avram this time because it's in Yoredeya that the discussion comes up, not in Orach Chaim, and I didn't want to give people links for a different PDF. I figured that gets confusing. So I brought it on the sheet in Source Tesvav. First, the Nishmas Avram quotes the Aruch HaShulchan, and he quotes with Moshe Feinstein supporting the idea of davening for the patient's demise. And then he asks the question, Dina's question, we're not allowed to engage in euthanasia, so what are we doing when we daven like this? So he says, the Chashuv Litzayin, let's say that's what happens when you cut and paste and you aren't quite careful to make sure it OCR'd it correctly. It's let's say not let's say it. But chashuv let's say it's important to note shegam lamanda amar shemuter lehispalel al chole sheyamus. Even within the view that you are allowed to daven for a patient to die, because we are going to see that not everybody agrees. The next word should be ein. That doesn't mean that you are also allowed to actively end the patient's life. When you daven to Hashem, it's a spiritual activity, and it's up to God to accept or not accept your davening. Meidach, on the other hand, laharog, killing, hu maisa adam, that's a human activity. V'aser min haTorah, it is biblically prohibited. Kechol ritzicha, like any act of murder. Lelo tulus al kavanosav, and it doesn't matter that your intentions are to help this person. Doesn't make a difference. So he draws a line and says, at the end of the day, when I'm davening, it's appealing to Hashem for something. I'm not acting on the patient, and it's up to Hashem to choose to accept it or not accept it. If Hashem feels this is good for the patient, he'll do it. If Hashem feels it's bad for the patient, he'll do differently. That's the Nishmas Avram's attempt to solve the problem of how this could be allowed when we are very much against euthanasia. Yeah?
So, when you're davening, you say, God, kill this patient. Or, God, do what's just and merciful in your eyes.
So that's... Right, so this is where we're going. This is exactly where we're going with this. The question is, why is this justified? Exactly what is it that we're doing? So the Nishmas Avram's formulation is, really, I'm leaving it to God. Right? He's saying, I am putting in my 2 cents with Hashem, but Hashem is going to decide what's good for the patient at hand. That's the way the Nishmas Avram does it. Rav Moshe Stern takes it a little bit differently. He says, what you're doing is davening for Hashem to end the patient's pain in whatever way Hashem chooses. That's the way he looks at it. Take a look at Tezayin. He says, Hatfila hi rak shakadosh baruch hu yatzil oso me hayisurin be'eze ofen shiyiyeh rak yatzilo. He says, davening is only that Hashem should save this person from his suffering in whatever way Hashem wants to save him. That fits the Gemara I added in brackets, the Gemara about Rabbi Yochanan and Bav Mitzia. Boy Rabbanon Rach Mi Alei. The Rabbanon davened for mercy for him. They weren't davening for him to die. They were davening for Hashem to save him in whatever merciful way Hashem sees fit. Hashem listened to them. Hashem removed the illness. Raklo al yedei shechai, not by having him live, ela kemodi isa hasam, but rather the way it played out in that gemara. Aval tefilas harabban lo hayal amisa kamuvan. He says you're not davening for the person to die. The Ber Moshe says, you are davening for Hashem to end the person's pain. That's the way that he looks at it. It's not a tefillah for death. Now, he wrote about this in at least two places. One is the tshuva that I quoted you here. The other is an article in a journal called Bishvilei HaRefuah, in which he made the argument that in the story about Rebbe, where his maid goes up on the roof and all of that, in that story, the Rabbanan would have agreed with Rebbe's maid. The problem was they were in the Beis Medrash. They didn't know Rebbe's condition. And there's evidence for it in the Gemara itself, which talks about them sending somebody to go see Rebbe's condition. So they didn't know how much pain he was in. No, but the point is they didn't know the pain that he was in. But in other words, it wasn't a debate where the rabbis in the Beis Medrash are saying we have to prolong his life even with the pain, and the maid is saying no, we shouldn't do that. They just didn't know the pain that he was in. So the way that Rav Moshe Stern looks at it is that the maid was not saying Rebbe should die, but she's saying may God overpower these people who are davening here and give him whatever, you know, release he should have. Honestly, I think that's a hard read. When she says the upper should overpower the lower, I think that's an unambiguous request. It sounds a lot more like what the Nishmas Avram said. You know? It sounds a lot more like the Nishmas Avram to me. Rabbi J. David Bleich, in Source Yud Zayin, offers a different justification for it. He says in an article, Treatment of the Terminally Ill, although man must persist in his efforts to prolong life, he may nevertheless express human needs and concerns through the medium of prayer. There is no contradiction whatsoever between acting upon an existing obligation and pleading to be relieved of further responsibility. Hang on. Man may beseech God to relieve him from divinely imposed obligations when they appear to exceed human endurance. What he's saying is, Hashem put me in a position where I am obligated to do everything to prolong life. Keep in mind, Rabbi Bleich holds the strongest camp of in terms of end-of-life situations. He is in the group that says, do everything. He says there's no such thing as heroic measures. There's no such thing as artificial means. Everything is natural by definition. That which we are capable of doing with our medical science is because Hashem gave us the means of learning how to do it and being able to do it. In his mind, you do absolutely everything. That's Rabbi Bleich Psah.
What's this thing as brain death?
That's a whole other discussion. This isn't even about that. This is just a statement that it doesn't matter. You tell me that that the patient is in pain. You have an obligation to do everything and do everything you can to stop the patient's pain. Rabbi Bleich writes, yeah, it will be humorous if not for the context. Rabbi Bleich says, I don't understand why people are not willing to use heroin for patients who are in a painful end-of-life situation. Why are you holding back on the painkillers? Are you worried about addiction? You talk about someone you can't relieve their circumstances. You can't prolong their life. So there's a whole other discussion from Rabbi Bleich. That's his position. In that context, look at what he's saying here. He says, you have two tracks. On the one hand, I am in a position where I'm obligated to do everything I can to prolong the patient's life. At the same time, I am allowed to daven to Hashem to say, please change this situation. I don't want to be in this situation. It's a terrible situation. I'm going to keep doing what you're making me do, but I'd rather that you change it. That's the way Rabbi Bleich understands it.
The patient's situation or your own?
No, the patient's situation.
Because you don't want to be in the situation that you're in.
And the patient doesn't want to be in the situation either. I mean,
healthy without pain in that situation.
So he says, you're asking God to relieve you from your duty to pursue life. That's the way he frames it. That's the way he looks at it. So what we're saying is, we have ample precedent for this idea of davening for, apparently, the patient's death. Acknowledging at the same time you still have to support the patient in whatever means. Three justifications. One being, you're just davening to Hashem, who can choose to accept or reject the tefillah. That's not called ending the patient's life. Second justification being, you're just davening for Hashem to end their pain as he will choose, with Moshe Stern. Or, you have a duty to pursue life, and you can ask God for relief from that duty. That's what you're doing. Two last notes on this point. Number one, an opposition view. The Tzitz Eliezer, Rabbi Eliezer Waldenberg, he says, absolutely not. Don't kid yourself. The Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, fantastic Talmud Chacham, serious posek, but we don't paskin like him. That's what he says. Take a look at Source Yiches. Devarim Eile Shaharan V'hayotze Mehen LaHalacha Lo Huvu Lo Betur V'nos Ekelav V'lo B'Shulchan Aruch V'nos Ekelav. He says, I have news for you. The Ran who said we follow Rebbe's maid doesn't make it into the Torah, does not make it into the Shulchan Aruch. We don't paskin that way. Milavato Shereisi Shnizka B'Tiferes Yisrael Al Mishnayos. Yeah, Rabbi Yisrael Lipschitz in the Tiferes Yisrael commentary to the Mishnah. He mentions it. Okay. That's not a safer psak. Ukefia nira dachuhu mehalacha. It appears that this was rejected from halacha. Mikaven shezeh perish mechudash v'yotzeis mimenu gam halacha mechudashes. This is a brand new way to read that story, he says. And it's giving us a brand new halacha. V'udavar shelo pershu af echad min arishonim bil ado besugyas ha-gemara b'nedarim sham. Nobody else on that gemara in Nedarim about visiting the patient and looking after the patient and all of that said what the Ran said, that there is such a thing as davening for a patient's death. He says, read the Marsha at Nedarim here, there. Shemaksha gamal etzim perusha shalaram, but devaya gemara, de nerekein. The Marsha and that gemara in Nedarim disagrees with the Ran. V'yesh lahavin gam haraya mimaisa de Rebbe v'ksuvos. And then he turns, haray adaraba, ha gemara shal misaperes, shagam achre sha'amse de Rebbe ramzo l'rabbanon de barur mitzare de Rebbe. He assumes that the Rabbanan were actually aware of what the maid was doing on the roof. They knew what she was doing. They heard her. And they heard her say, better for them to win up in the heavens. And they didn't listen. They kept davening. The imkain, Hare me rabbanon raya lahefech shagam kishachola mispatel biyisurim noraim de'ein takana lerefua bederech hateva. He says, even when the patient is in terrible suffering and there's nothing you can do naturally, b'chol zos ein lahapsik milavakesh alachola rachme shemayim ashalo yipalei mimenu davar. You don't stop davening for Hashem. Hashem can do anything. Certainly you can't daven for the patient to die. And he says, when it says in the Gemara that Rebbe's maid took the jug and threw it down on the ground and they stopped davening and he died, the fact that the Rabbanan were silent, it was because they were shocked by the noise from this jug being thrown to the ground. It wasn't that they agreed with her. It wasn't that they said, oh, you know what? Better for us to do nothing. Better for us to fall silent. Why would you paskin like her? Paskin like what the sages did, he says. They were davening. That's the way Shita Mekubetzis reads the Gemara. Ubecholzos. And then he says, with all of this, Nikarim hadvar, meaning the whole discussion that he does, I'm only bringing you, you know, snippets of it. Nikarim hadvarim ki asafek od kirsein belivo shabal chik kelev. He's referring now to something from Reb Chaim Palagi. Reb Chaim Palagi was a great Sephardi posek, and he dealt with this issue. And the Tzitz Eliezer quotes him, and he says Reb Chaim Palagi was very uncertain about this idea that you could daven for the patient to die. And therefore, he concludes his summary of the issues with the following language. Al koponim nira lafinias daiti. It appears in my humble opinion, dechigon da denidon didan lasos pesher davar. He says, I think we should do a compromise. Sheim he mitzdaeres harbe meod me yisurin kashim umarim mishakolarovim amru belavach ishein otikon lichios. If she's suffering terribly, and the doctors say we can't extend her life, v'nisyashum imena, they gave up hope already. Nira da filu hachi the gabi bala ubaneha ukrovel lo yasu shum bakasha utfila shetamus in lo yasu utfilu bakasha lekide shetichya. Eliyu b'shevi al ta'asu. He says her relatives, her husband, her kids, her family, they can't daven for her to die, even if they're not going to daven for her to live. He says, because otherwise, you know what we're worried about? If you let people daven for the death of the patient and they are the caregivers, you run the risk that somebody along the line, somewhere along the line, one in a thousand, he says maybe, is actually going to do something to hasten death. Once you've already licensed them to daven for it, you know what the next step is. Yeah, it's been in the news. It happens. It's like they're nogeya bedavar. They have a conflict of interest. Ubefrat lebala, and especially the husband. Maybe, God forbid, there's even a possibility that he's thinking, I can be released from this situation. Even though he's a Talmud Chacham, even though he's God-fearing, the pasuk says, I, God, examine the hearts. I examine a person's innards. I know what's going on inside. The thing to do is not to daven for this person to die. God knows what the husband wants anyway. Aside from the fact that it's not merciful on one's spouse to daven for them to die. Even if he's doing it out of mercy. You have the other side. And then he says, what about Amsei the Rebbe? Right? What about Rebbe's maid? So he says, I'm just going to rush a little bit. It's 9:28. He says, we are not on the level of Amsei the Rebbe. We're not on the level of Rebbe's maid. You know, what she did, she could do on her level. We can't necessarily do that. Better shebe al tasa, better not to daven than to daven that way, if there's the relative. And he says, ulam, two lines up from the bottom at the end of the line. Vula macherim shem zarim, outsiders. De'elem shum chashasha mikola chashasha zahamuros. There's no concern. They're not caregivers. So you're not worried that they're going to do something or whatever. So in you misfallen alakadesh tamas, which mach nafsha, harishus biyadam. So then they can daven that she should die. That they can do. Va'kola shem shemayim, it has to all be for the sake of heaven. That's the conclusion of Rav Chaim Palagi. The caregiver doesn't have the right to daven in that way. We had one other note that I was hoping to bring before Birkas HaGomel. We'll do it next time, God willing. The question I was asked about davening for a non-Jewish patient. So we'll talk about that, God willing, next time. And then we'll move into the conversation about Birkas HaGomel. Okay?
So
thank you very much. Important. Next week we are not having a shiur. Sorry, I should make that clear. I said it in the email also. Next week there is no shiur.